Joseph gave words concerning the exodus of Israel. Actually, an actual traversing of the tribes of Israel from Egypt back to their promised land. Last week we talked about the exodus, if you will, of the pilgrims on the Mayflower from the old Plymouth to the new Plymouth. They didn't know they were going to Plymouth. Did you know that? They thought they were going to Jamestown. So, now picture yourselves, okay? Let's put on our little hats. And this is Austin in about 2007 or 8. Then he got the idea to go get his gun. Picture yourself as a pilgrim. And you're on the shores of England, old England. And you heard this story about the new land. The new land. You didn't know anything about the natives that were there. You didn't know anything about the food, really. You really didn't know much about the journey. You knew it was long. I don't think they knew it was 66 days long. So you're on the land and you get these visions of freedom. Really, isn't that what they kind of envisioned? Freedom? Folks, that is your journey right now. Our journey has a picture. That city that Abraham saw is a city of freedom. It's a city of freedom of sin, from sin, freedom from danger, freedom from whatever we're going through right now. Freedom without him. Without him, life would be hopeless. But with Jesus, thank God I'm saved. We sang about stormy seas this morning. We sang about sailing. And we sang about without being without him, it would be pretty useless. So they talked to the ship's captain and all of the leaders there. And they're in two ships at first. Remember Speedwell, and of course Speedwell's sinking. It's leaking. So they dock Speedwell, and the pilgrims, only really the pilgrims who got off Speedwell and onto Mayflower, had the hope to get to the other shore. Some stayed there. The ship stayed there and some stayed there. But others got on the Mayflower because they had a vision of something in front of them. Notice that they couldn't see it. They didn't really know how to get there. They were passengers. They were kind of helpless themselves once they got on the boat. They just kind of had to maintain and stay alive. During that time, actually just prior to that time, this is the way they navigated. They would look at the stars, and they would take a measured object and stick it out in front of them and notice at a certain time of the day that either Pleiades, or that would be the night, the Pleiades, or Orion, or during the day the sun, or at certain times the moon would be at a certain level above the horizon. A certain direction and a certain level above the horizon. So that's how they did it in ancient times. We're talking about 3,000 years ago, even 2,000 years ago, they were doing this. That's where they got the sextant, of course, where they could literally measure the the distance above the horizon of a certain object. And then, of course, they had the compass, but the compass wasn't invented. It was invented about 40 years before Christ, maybe between 40 and 70 years before Christ. So they could have a direction with the compass, but what if it was cloudy? What if it was stormy? What if the winds were blowing and the waves were roaring and all of this stuff, and you could not see? You couldn't see. You had a direction with the compass. You tried to stay in the correction, but you did not know your speed, your distance from where you travel, how far you are, how close you are to shore. When I was in Bible class, one of my last Bible classes in seminary, Dr. Dwight Pentecost, that old ancient Bible teacher, lived to be over 100. He told a story of a time where he was with, I think, his brother, and they were fishing in the Northeast. I don't remember what body of water, but it was a large body of water. And they went out, they put their anchor out, and they were fishing. A few hours, they're fishing. The fog starts rolling in. They can't see. It's dangerous to be boating in the fog. And so they thought, well, we better pick up and go in. So they reach over to grab the anchor line, and it wasn't there. It had untied itself from the boat. Where are you? Where did you come from, and where are you going? What are the winds doing and the currents, and where are the shipping lanes and all of this stuff? I've been out on the river and the ocean a few times. Well, quite a few times, but one time I was out fishing with my brother, and the fog rolled in, and deep, deep fog. And we had everything, you know, the engine was running and everything, but the only thing that we had to go by was the bell, the dinging of the bell on the buoy. Okay, so now what bell is that? My brother, he works on the river, so he's been through all the tests and had to go through navigation on the river and all that stuff in the ocean. And I would tell him, I would ask him, what bell is that? What ding is that? What buoy is that? And even today, oh, that's buoy this, buoy that, buoy 10, buoy 12, buoy 21. I'd say, that's buoy 12, isn't it? No, that's buoy 18. You know, I lose track. If I look down, I look up, I lose track. These guys have been doing it for a long time. But if you get in the fog and storm, it's like, good luck. Good luck. The compass could tell you which way you're going. But where are you? And how far is it to get there? And have you been blown off course? So in the 1500s, it seems, they came up with what's called a ship log or a chip log. Some would call it chip log because it's a chip of wood. It's got lead on the bottom, and you would throw it out and it would be dead in the water. That lead would make it just sit still in the water, and you would roll it out with the time glass, and you would count the knots every 28 seconds. How many knots go by? Every 28 seconds, how many knots? That could tell you where you've come from and how fast you came. Oh, okay, now we're starting to get somewhere. Maybe if we know how far we got to go, and we know how far we've come, now we kind of know where we're at. Now we can look at the stars, maybe they can still help us, use a sextant, and find out where we're at. Not just where we're going, but where we're at, and even where we've been. Then they invented the traverse log, which they would take these knot readings, these chip log readings, every 4 hours. And they would, every 4 hours, so the watch was every 4 hour watch, they would take a reading, and then on this board, the compass board, they would put a peg in this is still the direction that we're going. So if they started a watch in a certain day, they would put the first peg after 4 hours. Okay, this is the direction we've been going. And then the next 4 hours, they put another peg. Okay, yeah, we're in a straight line. We're still going the same direction. If somebody comes up and takes the helm, then they would know, yes, we've been traveling in a northeast or a northwest projection for the last day or half a day or whatever. But on the bottom, they would put, every 4 hours, they'd go, well, how many knots? How many knots were let out every 28 seconds? And they would keep track of the knots. So now they get the idea that now we know where we've been. That lets us know about where we're at. That lets us know where we're at. So if you maintain a watch on the first part of your track, and you continue that track, you basically know that you're probably going to hit your mark. But you have to maintain the track. You have to maintain the watch. You have to continually do what you've been doing to stay on track, to stay on course, to know where you've been. 66 days of 48 chartings. Every half hour they would take one. 48 chartings a day is about 3,200 chartings to get across in 66 days. That's a lot of maintaining. That's a lot of work. Think about your life. Think about maintaining your watch. Where are you going? Where have you been? Where are you at? And are you maintaining your watch? And how do we do that? Especially in these stormy seas. Because if you start on track, but you get a little lazy, you don't know where you're going to end up. You don't take as many readings. You don't keep track of the winds. You don't keep track of the currents and how far you've come. And you get down there a ways and you go, where are we? I don't know. Where are you going? Well, I know we're supposed to be going. But so far, in 66 days, we still haven't got there. Well, how many readings have you taken? Oh, about half or two-thirds of what I should have. It's not really legalism. It's really maintaining your watch. It's really maintaining your life with the Lord. This work of tracking how far you've come and where you've come and how fast you've come is called dead reckoning. You remember hearing that? That seems to have come out first again in the 1500s. It seems to be Dutch or maybe Swedish. Dead reckoning. It means dead, like you are dead. Because when you throw that chip in the water, it just lays there. It just lays there, and then you start counting the knots. And you know where you're at. You know where you're at, and you know where you've been. You know where you've been. In smaller bodies of water, you can pick a lighthouse or a mountain, like we do on the Columbia. It's 4.5 miles wide. You can see there's the church. Where are you fishing today? We're fishing off the church at about 32 feet. Or we're buoy 10, or whatever. You know where you're at because you can see it. When I've talked to my mentor, Ivar Smith. He captained tugs for 30 or 40 years. And I talked to my brother, of course. Dead reckoning to them is looking straight ahead, picking your point, and going to it. In smaller body water. So think about this now. Dead reckoning for them was to find out where you've been in longer, long in the past, long bodies of water. You find out where you've been. You kind of know where you're at. And then when you start seeing your post, you can start saying, okay, dead ahead. Dead ahead. You pick a point and shoot for it. The Gaither Vocal Band sang a song, I reckon I'd better take action. I reckon I'd better know where I've been. I reckon I better know where I'm going. That word, reckon. Dead reckoning. Where I've been. Ephesians 2:12, remember that you were, where you've been, you were at one time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenant of the promise, having no hope. Really, those people weren't going anywhere. When we were back then, we weren't going anywhere. We thought we were going somewhere before we were saved. We weren't going anywhere because there was no hope. Remember the guy in the New Testament, I think I'll build a barn today, and so it's so-and-so, and then the Lord says, well, your life is required of you. He didn't even get the barn built. Where have we been? Where am I going? I'm sorry, where am I now? 2 Corinthians 13:5, examine yourself, Paul says. Examine yourself to see whether you are in the faith. Do I know Jesus Christ? Yes. Do I trust him? Yes, he's my life. Whatever he said, I believe. I don't quite understand it. I don't understand the currents and the distance between Plymouths. I don't understand the ocean and the winds, but I trust the captain. I know where I am. I've examined myself. Do you know where you're going? In our text today, Hebrews 11:14, for people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. You're seeking a homeland, a better country. Now watch this. This is great. Therefore, so you see, you're seeking something. And a couple times this morning, it just caught my attention. The idea of believing, a choice. Bob said it. Gary said it this morning. There's a believing, a choice. I have a choice. So I'm looking for a homeland in a better country. Therefore, God is not ashamed of you. Isn't that great? You want to please the Lord? Have faith in him. Choose to have faith in him. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Isn't it interesting? It's about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and others, but you're going to find out it's about all of us. He's not ashamed of me. Well, did you hear what I said yesterday? Did you hear how I treated somebody yesterday? I haven't maintained my watch totally, but I'm trying my best. And therefore, because I want to go to that city, the Lord is not ashamed to be called my God. For he has prepared for them a city. There's a city of lights, and it's not America. It's a city of lights in heaven prepared for you. I go to prepare a place for you. If it wasn't so, I wouldn't have told you that. He wouldn't have lied. I've had a couple friends and some family members that have had boats go out underneath them. My brother had a boat. A boat was going down. And he just stepped off it onto a barge. He was towing a barge. And the boat was going down. And he just calculated or reckoned. We'll get to that. He reckoned, I better stop on that barge. He stepped onto the barge. One morning, I remember, I think it was maybe late at night, I can't remember, I was really little, 71, I think 1971 or something. Got a call, my dad lost a boat. It was off, I think, Newport, Oregon, I think, if I remember right. The Blue Sea, wooden trawler, lost a boat. Mom had to go get him. Well, how do you get off of that? This one is a Tacky 2. I had just retired from the Air Force. And I was so proud, so glad to get home and see my friends and family. And one of my friends, very, very close childhood friend, was on this boat. Him and 18 other people. And the captain decided, well, he can go over the bar. He reckoned he can go over the bar. He was in a small body of water. He was dead reckoning. Not too well. Boat flipped. I just heard the interview again this morning, just for my memory's sake. And one of the guys who survived said that boat rolled twice within just like that. One wave come over the front there. Green water. Green water's bad. He called it. And he went in to get out from underneath the water, and then all of a sudden that boat rolled twice. And he was stuck in there. He was stuck in the cab for 10 minutes. They never found my friend's body.